Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be back. Today, I'm here with Ellen Cardy. So Ellen has just become one of my favorite people from HES, and I effectively reached out to her online, not realizing at the time that she was graduated from Harvard. And then lo and behold, we have so much to talk about. So Ellen is the Chief Human Resources Officer at Mobile Communications America. Ellen leads people and culture for a fast-growing communications and security company operating across more than 100 locations in the United States. Much of MCA's growth has come through acquisitions, which means her team is constantly navigating one of the hardest organizational challenges. How do you integrate new companies without losing the people, the identity, the culture that really made them successful in the first place? So at MCA, they call their approach the big hug. I mean, how cozy is that? But today we're going to explore what happens psychologically inside teams when companies merge, what leaders often get wrong about integration, and how organizations can approach growth in a way that keeps people connected rather than fragmented. Ellen, I'm just so pumped to have you here, and you're just a great person and have a wealth of knowledge. So what did I miss here? Who are you? What's your story?
Thanks, Bobbi. First of all, I am so honored to be here and having a little fangirl moment, my own. I've had so many classmates who took your classes and then just listening to the podcast, seeing the LinkedIn post. So glad to be here. Excited to talk about my favorite subject, acquisitions. I'll share, I had had acquisition experience at big companies. MCA is my first opportunity to work in the private equity space. I like to talk about my MCA story. I started as the head of HR 8 years ago. We've grown from 365 people to over 1,700 team members today and more than 47 acquisitions. So it's been a fun and wild ride. And I would say our big hug is something I'm probably most proud about, is how we bring people into the MCA team, making them feel supported, making them feel like they have an opportunity to be here at MCA. My favorite piece is when I think about day one. Everyone's looking. They have skepticism, their arms are crossed, they're nervous. And by the end of the first day, we're giving hugs, we're taking selfies, people are showing pictures of their family and friends. That's when you know you've done the right thing, is when they're welcomed and they're not absorbed.
Wow, you have a lot of experience here. And it's like when I first think about an acquisition, the thing I don't picture is a big hug, right? But you've taken this sort of warm visual and operationalized it. So I'm just thinking, like, the moment like an acquisition's first announced, what does that feel like? What goes through people's minds on both sides, I guess, you know, being acquired and also the acquirer? Like, what's happening for people? What are some of the first emotional responses?
It is emotional and it's psychological. And so I use the example is oftentimes people have a negative connotation of being acquired, right? They hear of layoffs, they hear of changes in their benefits. It is a very personal. And sometimes you want to think about the layer, there's a little layer of grief. The other part is acquisition isn't something you choose. You choose to go work for a company, but when it's acquired, you don't have that sense of choice often. So I'll quote you. You often talk that safety is not soft. So when employees hear a company has been acquired, the first thing they think is, do I have a job? Am I going to get paid? Do I have health insurance? So I think our first opportunity is to share clarity and tell them in those moments, what's going to happen? What's not going to happen? So then they can go home at night to their family to say, okay, here's what I think I know at this point.
Mm-hmm. We work with a lot of companies that are either getting acquired or acquiring. And yeah, it's like this real psychological challenge because job means security. Security means safety. We need safety as human beings. And so when you hear that word acquisition, you're like, oh God, am I going to be safe really at the end of the day? And there's a lot of pressure from family and everybody to be like, where are you going to get your money from? And so I think what you're really speaking to is, in the absence of information, people fill in the gaps. And so there's something about what you're communicating and how you're communicating that helps people build that sense of safety.
And I often think about in that moment, we talk about the fight or flight mode. And so in that moment, you could probably have all of the best presentations, but their brain, they're not processing. There's fear, there's concern. They're thinking, do I still have a job? Do I have health insurance? Will my pay change? Is my role going away? And so I often find in those first couple days, you end up repeating. The simpler, the better. We've narrowed it down to a very simple FAQ, and we actually put the question, what will happen to my pay? What will happen to my benefits, to create that clarity in that moment? Because it's almost as if you're getting a ton of information, you're overprocessing, then you have the emotional response, and then you also have to go home and in some cases, show a sign of strength to your family to say, I'm not worried, it's going to be okay. When in reality, you are thinking, oh gosh, I'm not sure. I don't know what's going to happen here. And so there's so much that is happening, and that it's happening not just in that first couple of days, it happens over several weeks. And I often think integration is not just the first 30 days, the first 60 days. We have companies that we're still talking about making sure that they're feeling comfortable 2 years later.
Mm-hmm. There's so much that's challenged psychologically within an acquisition. And as you're speaking, I'm just thinking of one company in particular we work with, but like a super, super strong culture, just got acquired, really excited. The founders feel a sense of excitement, loss, change. There's an identity kind of challenge. And like now it's more public, but at the time they were sitting with this, right? And so feeling like they're withholding information from the people that they really care about. But not sure, like, how do you navigate when there was a few month window where just the papers weren't signed and they couldn't share anything? And then so they're created these sort of like micro fractures, you know, like between people. And I'm just, as you're listening, I'm thinking, yeah, that continues on too, between the employee to the family too. It's like this sense of security can create these like little mini fractures and relationships that otherwise have felt really cohesive and connected.
Yeah, you touched on a really interesting thing of what the individual is going through. And I can share, we have been on the acquired part, and then we have also been the acquirer. When you go through that, I remember we were having a change in our private equity partnership. It's my first time going through a transaction. And I remember thinking, okay, I got to process this myself before I can tell my husband, because I know he's going to have a bunch of questions. So it was probably a day or so where I had that sit with me. When I think about founders, they're going through the process of this is their baby. They built this baby, and they oftentimes want to make sure the people are taken care of, the original business intent. And as a company that acquires other companies, we acquire them because they're good companies. So you don't want to lose it. When we find integrations that go well, it's because the previous leaders had trust, had transparency, and they really spoke openly about why the acquisition is happening, where they shared their own feelings of, here's why I think this is a good thing. Here's why we're making this decision. Here are the concerns we have. And we've started to address those concerns. That integration process is so much smoother, where you have a tendency to withdraw in that moment of uncertainty. When leaders withdraw and they aren't open and they aren't transparent, the challenge is sometimes you don't have all the information, right? Close date moved 30 days because there was some issue in diligence. That is a really interesting place of when do you start to talk to your team? Who on your team? If you have influencers in your organization, pull them in early. Let them have time to process themselves, because then they can help support the rest of the organization. We often do key messages for leaders about, hey, who is MCA? What is this company? So then when they're spreading the message, they're using the same sound bites that we want to use when we come in day one. And usually that process starts a couple of weeks before closing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wondering about timing of it all, but I think what I'm hearing you say, and I've experienced this on the like through other companies, is like it can be experienced as like a little bit of a trauma, right? You get this information and you're like, oh my God, what is happening? And so you go into this, like, could be a little numb, your brain sort of trying to take it all in, very flooded. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like the things that you know that, and you just work around it. So you put things down, you know, the FAQ, things on paper, you know, you're going to have to say things multiple times, especially at the front end. So to ground people, and what to expect. And then you kind of are anticipating the questions they're going to have. What does this mean for me, like personally, as a culture and an organization? And what's the why? And what we see with people are rational human beings, right? They need information to anchor.
Yes.
And I think what ends up happening is leaders pull away because they're not sure. They feel awkward. They too have conflicted feelings as founders or executives. And so they just sort of like don't lead with the information, which creates more problems than it's worth.
And you said it earlier, in the absence of information, people will create their own. 9 times out of 10, when the founder tells their employees, they're saying, I wonder what was going on. You were in these closed door meetings, or we hadn't seen you in the office, or hey, these people walked through the building that you said were your bankers and we didn't know who they were. People know, they pick up on signals. Mm-hmm. The other part we think about is so often leaders try for perfection. Clarity beats perfection any day. People can handle change. They absolutely can handle change. What they can't handle is the uncertainty, because their brain doesn't know what to do with it from that perspective.
100%. Yeah. It's like you're trying to anchor, right? Yes. And it creates this cognitive dissonance because there's a gap, right? But a discomfort, because like they're picking up on cues and lack of information. So then they start to fill it in and it could be wrong. And create more anxiety than it is actually, you know, do.
Bottom.
So when you think about like timing of all this, it sounds like communication is really important to you. Just run me through kind of like some of the key things that you do at the different stages.
Yeah, absolutely. So a big part is during diligence is we want to hear, talk about your team, talk about your culture. How do you communicate with them? Is there anybody early on that you think they're going to take this really hard and we need to make sure we give the big hug, but maybe an extra squeeze at the end for them? Is there anyone that when we start to think about the first 2 weeks that you think it'd be worthwhile for us to meet with one-on-one individually? It may be someone who is going through a major health crisis and you add that and the fear of an acquisition on top of it. It may be a key leader or a high potential that you think they're going to be so excited about the growth opportunity they have. So a big piece in diligence, oftentimes people focus on financials and you need to make sure it's a good deal, but the people are going to make sure it's a good deal. And that part in diligence is really important. We start talking with owners and we start saying, hey, when are you thinking about communicating? And we find if they're like, well, maybe like a couple days before, and we're like, well, let us share some examples. Bobby, I've had leaders that have told them 6 weeks, the sooner you start bringing people under the hood, the better off the integration process, because they've had the time to go through their grieving, right? Their shock, their concern, their processing, all of those wonderful things that we go through when we hear something. And we've also had leaders who just weren't comfortable. And we showed up day one, 5 minutes after they told. And it is a different, I call it the big hug. And then you got white gloves because people are scared. They're upset. And so their reactions are not about us. Their reactions are about, hey, something big changed. So I do think preparing the team starts in the diligence process and continues. And then we often talk with leaders that, so everyone thinks, hey, first couple of days, everyone's happy. They're feeling comfortable. They've got information. There's the Kubler-Ross change curve. I have it posted in my office. I look at it all the time, because if I'm talking to someone from an acquisition and they're just like, well, this is terrible and this sucks and this is horrible. And people do talk that way. Sometimes they're like, your systems are clunky or this isn't what I expected. I think about the time. We think if you take a 6 month period from close to 6 months later, there is every time, some of them a little bit earlier, some of them a little later, and they go up and they're excited. And there's just that natural human reaction of, okay, wait a minute, this isn't what I thought. And then they come back out and we call it the dip of doom. And you see it and you recognize it and you're like, oh, you're in the dip of doom. Okay. And you listen a bit more, you ask more questions, you're a little bit more patient. And then most often they come back out of it. And I think to be successful, you have to decide, am I adding to the dip of doom? Or is it just the natural state of people? Everyone goes through it. I encourage people, you go through it personally when things happen in your own life. And I'm like, oh, I am in the dip of doom right now. But guess what? The goal is, how do you shorten and get them up to performance and productivity?
I love it. It's like the Kubler-Ross model is really a grief model, right?
Yes.
It's like if you lose somebody, and acquisition, even in the best case scenarios, there's a loss, there's a change, there's a new team. Some team members will quite literally not be there. And there's a lot that's losing. There's a lot to gain too, but there's loss too. And it sounds to me like you really just acknowledge and appreciate that versus like this almost toxic positivity, which is like, this is going to be great. This is great for the company. And then when you do that, it forces people like, but you're not thinking about, now you're getting in this like polarized thing versus what you're doing is normalizing the feelings. The dip of Dune, I've seen this before. People feel this way. It's okay to feel this way. I'll be in it with you. And then through that, it builds a relationship and then they trust you more. And they're like, okay, maybe this isn't so bad because they're discovering it for themselves by experiencing you versus you telling them it's so great.
Yes. It's like telling someone who's really upset to calm down.
Oh my God, it's the worst.
It's a natural human behavior, but then you're like, no, wait, I hurt myself.
Yeah, you took a different motivation class. In our motivation class, we do motivational interviewing, right? And so a lot of what we talk about is not engaging reactance or defensiveness. And the way you don't do that is really by empathizing and validating like someone's emotional experience versus saying, no, you should feel this way, or it's okay, it will be okay, don't worry about it. And people are like, but I am worried about it. Am I going to be fired? Am I not going to be fired? Who's going to pay? You know, where's my paycheck coming from?
Yeah. 45 acquisitions. I had some missteps and maybe I should have taken your motivation class because I clearly remember we're in an inventory count. We're in a new location. An individual is having to, we've done the people side. He's learning a new system and he is just like, this is not working. And he's very upset. And I'm like, wait, just take a deep breath, calm down. And that did not go well for me. And So it was, you learn in the moment of, okay, wait a minute. This is real. This is a job this individual has had for 20 years and they were good at their job. And now we're coming in and we're telling them how to do different. And you mentioned the grief process. You were grieving the way you did things. Didn't matter if they were good or bad. And you probably complained about them before we came in, but you have a sense of loss on it. And we talk a lot about making sure you say what will change and what will not change. So maybe I should have taken that class and I would have been better prepared for that one.
Oh, stop it. I just like to, you know, what's the word? Rib you, right?
You could. You're like, you missed out. You missed out.
Yeah, I missed out. So when you think about like that sort of like what will change, what won't change, what are some of the things that are on that list?
In our business, we are acquiring good businesses that have a base of customers, that have customer trust, that have a technical expertise. So MCA, we don't make anything. We are a service company. Well, if you're a service company, your profitability comes from the people and what they do and what they bring in the relationships and that local dirt that they own. And so we really remind them that yes, the name on the paycheck might change. Today, I found out I've reached the pinnacle of my career because apparently my phone number is on the MCA paycheck. And I didn't know this until someone called and said, is this payroll?
Now people are going to start spamming you, Ellen. You just outed yourself.
I know. I started laughing. I was like, oh, and they're like, well, this was a number on my paycheck. I have a payroll question. Like, hey, I can help you turn it into a great conversation, but I digress. That will change. The amount shouldn't change, but the name on the paycheck will change. The systems you use will change. Your benefits may change. We do a really good job of trying to keep people whole. What we talk about won't change though is actually their work. Unfortunately, the people you work with today, you're still going to work with them. So if you didn't like them before, I can't help you with that. But now you have extended cousins and sisters and brothers that can help you support what you're doing. You have a network to pull on instead of being out on your own. We also talk about their customers, what they do, the relationships they have with their customers and how they deliver to the customers. That doesn't change. And so it's almost like the mission doesn't change, but now they have more support and they also have some growth opportunity. Our best success stories of people who wanted career growth, wanted to see what was next, but maybe in a small business didn't have that opportunity. And I will share a lot of our leaders came from an original acquisition and they're leading a business that is 10 times the size of the business they came. And that's really exciting to watch.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's such an upside to be able to like expand the growth trajectory is huge for people. I'm just thinking, I was talking with an investment company and they were talking about how culture and team are so important in the companies that they're buying. And they didn't really have like an operational framework. So there's like their junior analyst type people going out and like being like, seems like good guys or great women or whatever, but there wasn't really a way to properly assess this like you would assess other parts of the business. So it just got me curious, right? Is like, all right, well, what do you look at when you are going to acquire a company? What are some of the things that really signal to you and your team around, you know, this is a strong team or this is a strong culture? Like, and what are some of the things that you look to?
Yeah, I love that question. I would say sometimes we get it right and sometimes we don't. One, how they talk about their business, how they talk about their customers. We are a service business. And so there's a people aspect to it. We are not expecting them to be financial experts. They're founders. They know the market. They know their work. And that translates into how they talk about their team. And so we actually do a piece where we ask them to walk through their census. Tell us about your team. And we're specifically asking, what is their role? What do they do? Is there a retention risk? Are they a high potential? How they talk in that conversation tells you everything you need to know. Is, do they know them? Are they connected? When that call goes, maybe it's scheduled for an hour and you're still, the individual still talking about their people an hour and 45 minutes later, that is a very clear, you can't assess that. There is no way to know except they have that knowledge that they're sharing with you. How they're thinking about the impact of the acquisition to their people. Oftentimes, you may have owners that are focusing on, well, hey, what's the valuation? And what does this mean? And here's my exit plan. We're even really lucky. A lot of our owners are still with MCA today because they love the business they're in. And maybe they were just ready to hand it over. They didn't have a succession plan. But what we look for is how do they show up? And this is a cliche, moments that matter for their team. There may be a pay break and they've had accrued PTO. The owner's thinking, you know what? I really should pay that out. That's something that's going to help bridge them. Some may not even think about it. And so that's going to tell us a little bit about how they think from a culture perspective. The other thing we have done is we do use an assessment process. If there is a leader that is somebody that we're thinking, hey, could they be a leader in the organization? We have a battery of tests and it's your psychological, your intelligence tests. But I would say we mirror the data within the conversation, the experience that you see. And sometimes we get it right and sometimes we don't, but it is definitely not a point in time. Usually within that first year, you have a really good feel of, hey, is this leader going to be somebody that can scale with the organization?
Other conversations, you've talked really about this idea of like the third culture, you know, because we see a lot, it's like, you know, there's a existing the acquirer and then the company getting acquired and they're coming with two different cultures, right? And so how do you think about that? And what is the third culture? And what does this mean for you? And how do you build that?
Gosh, I love it because I think of MCA as a continual third culture, right? We start out one way and I use the analogy to someone the other day. It's like designing the car while you're building the car and you're driving it at 100 miles an hour and you're singing a song along. I'm going to give a really good example. So it was maybe my fifth or sixth acquisition. It was a larger acquisition, family owned, 60 plus years in the industry, had passed from great grandfather to grandfather to the five children in the family ran it. And we went in thinking we knew, okay, I've done five acquisitions, I've got this. And they came back to us with a list like 3 pages long of what's this process and what's this structure and what's this. And I would say they had this really, really strong process mind. They had a really, really big, strong customer focus, and they made us better. And so if you think about what they brought to the table and where MCA was today, they helped us create that MCA of the future, our third culture. How do we bring the best of both worlds into that third piece? And they made us better. And we then started a playbook. We had process charts going into the next acquisition and they were like, oh, this is really good. And we're like, yeah, we know we didn't have it 2 acquisitions ago. I also think about people are bringing a customer base. People are bringing a book of knowledge. And as part of the acquisition process, if you, it's a good business. We bought it for a reason. And if you discredit that, you're missing an opportunity of how are you making the whole better? So I always love to think about it as you've got this culture and this culture. There's probably some similarities. There's probably some differences. Together, we're going to make that third piece. And there's probably some, there's been books and research and I can't cite it and you will help me with that. But I always like to think about it, how are we contributing to make that process faster?
Yeah. And I'm just thinking like change is good at times, right? And it's like it shakes the system up. And so I could see there being real opportunity that companies are going along on both sides, right? And then when you bring them together, there's a forming that needs to happen that challenges like what's working, what's not working, which invites growth and evolution and innovation and development in ways that otherwise each side might not really experience. And then the question becomes like, how do you handle that in the way that you are handling it, which is like head on, directly, strong communication in a evaluative and caring way, but just directly, like put the cards on the table, what's working, what's not working, and let's build something great together. That seems to be like the tone that you really adopt here.
Yeah. And I love what you said, because I think when I hear you speak, it talks about helping people feel like they're part of something, right? And helping them shape it. And I think that's kind of the point where we know they're bringing something to the table. How are we recognizing that? How are we giving them the opportunity to shape it? And sometimes we have missteps and we don't do it in the way that they think we should do it. I also really wonder, so something you just said, if you took Kubler-Ross change curve and you layered it against the team forming, storming, and ignoring.
My mind was going there when you were speaking.
When you said that, it was such an aha of like, oh, Bobby, take that and run with it, because that's exactly, like, you've got two things happening and then influencing how quickly do they move to their performing stage is how quickly they move out of the dip of doom.
It's so funny because when you were talking about this, I was picturing this, that these different models happening.
I saw the light.
And the other thing I'm thinking is, or what I'm hearing in the way you're speaking, and I imagine it's the MCA way, is there's a sense of humility that is required. Like, I just can feel you saying like, I see you. People have a human need. They want to feel seen and heard. And so a lot of companies, and I've seen this on the other side, are like, we've got to protect the culture. We are who we are, you know, like that kind of thing. But the more that like the big kid in the room in many ways can say like, we value you. We see you. Help me understand. It requires like a humble stance that actually minimizes the reactance. And then people can kind of sit back and be like, oh, okay. I don't have to like defend turf, and rather think about like, let's reflect together. And it changes the stance in the room. Mm-hmm. You know,
you are so spot on, because one of the things we've learned is that sometimes we make bad decisions, and how quickly you say, you know what, that was stupid. Let's go. I think about a time where I think we were trying to keep a really, really hard line on, I don't know, PTO policy. And it was like, no, we don't have anybody else doing it. You've got to be consistent. And it was a real pain point for the people. They really, like, it was very, very important for them. And I remember our executive chair was like, well, what's it going to hurt in this moment? We can bring them back into the structure. We talk about everyone's baby, and you think your baby is like an idea and is the best idea and the smartest idea. And so there's a lot of power as a leader realizing, yes, this is the direction I want to go. What am I going to give up by not sitting and listening? And am I going to gain more traction now by saying, you know what, maybe we do have to say yes to this. So later we can be more productive in going forward too.
Yeah, it's so both caring and strategic, which helps companies, right? So it's like, and I've heard you talk about this, and I really think of like, sometimes leaders will really dig their heels in, and it's like you, this idea that it's okay to like lose the battle to win the war and have a much like broader perspective. So just thinking to translate that as an acquirer, it's like, and this is really coming from you, what are the things that they're non-negotiables that you really need the company to like adopt soon? And then really, if you kind of stratify, what are things that you might be able to say maybe on or negotiate a little? And what are really things that like don't matter as much? And then what's driving that decision? Is it like just cause, fairness, equity to other companies, like pride? And then get clear what that is, and then figure out where you have flexibility in the name of building relationship and cohesion, which ultimately is going to drive the best outcomes. Cohesion's the thing, right? That drives the outcomes. And so it's relational, it's reciprocal. There's a given, there's a take, you know, but everybody has hard lines somewhere. So what are they? And how do you communicate super directly about them? You know, and just name those things.
It's asking yourself, is this the hill I want to die on? Is this a hill? Because sometimes it's not a hill and it's a little speed bump, and you're missing there's a bigger mountain that you're going to be able to contribute to as well. I love that you talk about cohesion. I imagine with a lot of your customer, just when you think about the client groups you're working with, I'd love to hear, I imagine the challenges within bringing a team on from an acquisition are probably the similar challenges that people have with bringing just a team together in their normal business work.
Exactly. It's like, it's bringing people together is a thing. Everything I do is integration, cohesion. How do you bring people together and build strong relationships? We don't think about work as relationships. It's like, wow, that sounds like emotional or like something you do in your private life. But it's like, because we're social by nature, relationships drive outcomes. We can call it different things, right? We can call it alignment. We can call it cohesion. Those are like the business words of it. But when we can get that right, and just contextualize it for the environment, everyone wins. So we know it improves engagement, profitability, retention, all of that, speed to operation. But we also know on the like more personal side, it improves quality of life, it improves longevity, things like that. Because we're social beings. We forget that. We're basically animals dressed in suits at work.
You know? I love that. Our CEO, he's amazing. And he uses a phrase, culture plus people equal profits.
Or oh, results. I love it.
And it is, no, it's not results are from this, but I don't know why we're people ourselves, but we forget that. We forget that. And we think, oh no, well, this is the job. I like to think of it as a contract. Yes, you were paid and you get a check every 2 weeks, but you spend more time at work than you do with your own friends and family. So why would the same rules not apply?
Exactly. Yeah. We don't think about work relationships as relationships, right? But it's like humans are humans and we have the same foundational needs and we just have to kind of like contextualize it for the environment. And when work, which understands that, which it seems like you do so well, then you have great outcomes, which is why you have the outcomes you have. But as we're just winding down, Ellen, like, what have I not asked you? Like, you're just incredible and I could talk to you all day, but what have I not asked you or anything you want to end on?
I think if I needed to end on something from an acquisition perspective, the goal is you want to see people. You want to respect the culture that was built. Regardless of how amazing you think your culture is, you want to, and that you're not there to erase it. You're there to build upon it. And using all the same guidelines that you would think in your own work today with your own team, the same leadership principles, acquisitions, the environment and the context is different. But the principles still same apply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people have a need to belong and they have a need for control. And when they are out of control, you have to over-communicate what they can control. When they feel like their belonging's threatened, you want to over-communicate belongingness through like what you know to be true. And I feel like you've demonstrated that so well. So I just appreciate you taking time, Ellen. You're awesome. Keep up like doing the great work and just hope to see you soon one way or the other.
Thank you for making this an amazing experience. And as always, I always give some good takeaways from our conversations. Aww. I appreciate your time and appreciate everything you're doing to help us be better leaders.
Oh my gosh. We're all in it together, just trying to like have these conversations. So thanks, Ellen. You're the best.
Thank you.